This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. It is, of course, Thursday, the 12th of April, 2018. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Yuvraj,
Jeff Sandhu,
Terrible Tusam, of course, and it is Thursday, so we have tech-related stories running throughout today with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch, as per usual, get us on WhatsApp. Jeff is manning the station. It is 018-789-8899. He likes a lot of texts. Keep them coming in. And at Twitter, we are at BFM Radio. Stories that we'll be covering today. Arvind is going to talk to us about personality traits and ones that can put you at risk for smartphone addiction. Mm-hmm. He's doing all that with his phone in his hand.
Oh, yeah.
We then have a story about algorithms and how they can automatically spot face swaps in videos.
Yeah.
Then a wearable device from MIT that can hear the words you say in your head. This is some really interesting stuff. Jeff, of course, has to have a story about killer robots at some point. So that's coming up at story number four. Story number five, how you'll be able to buy a device very soon that will be able to freeze things in the same way that a microwave heats things.
What's the reverse?
It's like a reverse microwave almost, yes. Okay, then, personality traits then, Arvind. Give me them.
Yeah, no, but first, before we go to the traits, we have to understand what addiction means. So, it's not just checking your social media feeds all the time or just checking for notifications and stuff. Addiction involves some degree of obsessive compulsiveness, urgency, and online use that has negative consequences, such as when behavior affects personal relationships and causes things like depression, social anxiety, loneliness, or even professional problems like missing classes or meetings or deadlines at work and things like that. Research also shows that 20% of the population is addicted, but an additional...
How much?
20%.
Addicted to their cell phones.
Yeah, already addicted to their cell phones. But an additional 30 or 40% is in danger of being addicted to social media because of how the behavior of the platforms themselves have changed to make us more addicted. Like we spoke about the scroll down
and the thumbs
effect,
up,
the and thumbs the, up and stuff.
The serotonin boost you get.
Yeah. So this also ties into the Cambridge Analytica fiasco and how they collected data from millions of Facebook users. So they use something called the Big Five or the five-factor model, and it's a personality test to target them with ads designed to influence their votes for the 2016 U.S. election. So basically how this works is the test scores on, it gives people five traits like openness, conscientiousness or meticulousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism. Yeah, and it was used in the election to predict the way a voter would respond to like an advertisement. But using the same kind of method, the Big Five can predict a lot more than just how people will respond to ads, including the way you score the test can tell you how likely you are to become addicted to your screens. So, for example, the research shows that people who score high on neuroticism and low on conscientiousness and low on agreeableness are more likely to become addicted to social media, video games, instant messaging, or any kind of other online stimuli. Weirdly, studies also found that extroverts are more likely to become addicted to cell phone use than introverts.
That is interesting.
Yeah, because normally you would think that introverts would become more addicted to their...
Unless, of course, these extroverts are addicted to posting their own selfies on Instagram.
I would actually assume that extroverts would love using their phones. Like, they just can't stop using their phone, taking photos of themselves.
Actually, when you look at the idea of the influencer, that kind of makes sense, right?
A lot of influencers are, you know, extroverts, right? I don't think there are any... Well, there are, I'm sure there are influencers who are introverts by nature, but they have to be extroverts. That ambivert profile, which...
Hannah Tan, I believe, is introvert by her own description.
I am slightly ambivert as well, like, you know, being in radio and then, you know, going out for events and stuff, but, like, I would just love staying at home and not doing anything.
Do I have a device for you at the end of the show?
See, but it's actually it's interesting, like, you know, five traits, it's all it takes to sort of like map you out and you know, sort of digest. And yet we all here think we're all unique individuals all special in our own way. Well, data shows you wrong, all right? We're all the same. It's just five ways to differentiate each individual here, huh?
Arvind, there's a show in here somewhere.
Yeah, there is, because the weird thing is they say that these things are not exclusive, the traits are not exclusive. exclusive to themselves, because if you combine one or two traits together, then there is a chance that it will either make it worse, the addiction worse, or there's a way they can both combine to make the addiction less. So that's the it's strange how it works. So some of them make sense, because less agreeable people might love to live in their own technological world because it does not need them to be friendly with the outside world and socialize with anybody.
Yeah.
But neurotic people spend more time online because they love being part of a group and it sort of validates them. But some of the findings become complicated because by combining one or two of the traits, it can either reduce or make it worse. For example, someone who is highly meticulous and organized is also at high risk for addiction because he or she is
you're meticulous, you're organized, you're clearly an addict.
And they say that it's also neurotic.
And you read it, so you're part of a forum.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Because if you are meticulous, then you are also stressed about being meticulous.
Yeah, it sort of makes you get hooked onto your gadgets and devices.
Okay.
Yeah,
I spent 4 hours on Reddit last night. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Slept at 2 a.m.
Yeah, see, I'm just as bad. You know, I'm clearly neurotic. You know, I do have certain behavioral traits that keep bringing me back to certain platforms and using them over and over and over again. I'm in this category.
It's like stepping on those the same colored tiles when you're walking in a shopping complex.
I do that. Love it. It's such a nice feeling when you do it, though.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when you even the tiles, you know, there's that line in between both tiles. There's a black line, the cement itself, right? I don't like stepping on that. I like to actually step on the tile itself. Like,
See, there's a thing in England as well about, you know, the grates that you have on the floor.
Yeah.
There's a thing in England where you and it's a behavioral thing, right? Don't walk over more than three. You have to step off and then back on again. It's complete nonsense. But I do it.
It's like when you scratch your hand and then you have to scratch it like 7 times. Like when I get like a mosquito bite,
right?
If I scratch one hand 7 times, then I have to scratch the other
hand
7 times.
Because it feels weird. Like one hand is heavier than the other.
This is not what we're doing. Carry on.
So I guess like all of us are sort of neurotic and addicted to your... Would you say you're addicted to your social media feeds? I don't think I am. Not yet.
I'm not addicted to social media, but I am addicted to my phone.
I would admit that
I am addicted to my phone. But social media, I can stay off Facebook and Instagram. That's fine. But staying off like Reddit or just, you know, platforms that gives you articles that you can read and digest in your own time, in your own little bubble.
Right. So like,
I love that.
Reddit and Medium and all of the other kind of aggregators is stuff that I really find useful for distraction and content and just something to keep my mind active. And I'm often in that position where I want to read something, but I don't know what it is. I'll go to Reddit and within minutes, I'm like, oh, there's something interesting.
It's just unfortunate that all these platforms and all, it's so easily accessible using the smartphone. So that's why I am addicted to the smartphone.
I think in that case, then I'm addicted to podcasts.
Because and how do you listen to your podcasts?
In the car.
Using your phone?
Using my phone.
You're addicted to your smartphone.
Yeah, addicted to your smartphone. So I'm using it in the car.
Self-diagnosis.
There we go. Anyone who wants that, you can tweet in or you can WhatsApp and we'll do a self-diagnosis of are you addicted
to your We're going to have to move on. Good story though. But folks at home, let us know on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Be honest, do you think that you are in some way addicted to your smartphone? The usage of your smartphone, moving away from social media, are you addicted to your smartphone? I mean, it's a very broad question, but we'll expand it as the show goes.
And it's not
on.
A bad thing, even if you are.
No, it's not. Mm. Maybe. Mm. Could be. Possibly. Right, next story. Jeff has an algorithm that automatically spots face swaps in a video. Why is this important?
Yeah, well, I don't have the algorithm, but the ability to take one person's face or expression and superimpose them onto video of another person has recently become possible. I think we've all heard of the deep fakes that have emerged on websites as Reddit and 4chan. They're showing famous individuals' faces superimposed onto body of adult actors. Now, this phenomenon has significant implications. At the very least, it has the potential to undermine the reputation of people who are victims of this kind of forgery. It possesses a problem for biometric ID systems as well, and it actually threatens to undermine the public trust in videos of any kind. So a very quick and accurate way to spot these videos is desperately needed, and thankfully Andreas Rossler at the Technical University of Munich in Germany and his colleagues who have have developed a deep learning system that can automatically spot face swap videos. This new technique could help to identify forged videos as they are posted onto the web. The new technique relies on a deep learning algorithm that Rossler and his team have trained to spot face swaps. This algorithm can only be learned from huge annotated data sets of good examples, which never existed until recently.
Until now.
So the team began by creating a large data set of face swap videos and the originals itself, and then they use two types of face swaps that can be easily made using software that you can download on your phone as well, like Face to Face. Now, the first type of face swap superimposes one face onto another body so that it takes on their expression. Now, the second take is taking the expression from one face and then modify it onto the second face itself. So it's not completely changing your face, it's just changing your expression itself. Now, the team have done this with over 1,000 videos, creating a database about 500,000 images with faces that have been manipulated with state-of-the-art face editing software. They call this the Face Forensic Database. Now, this size of the database is a significant improvement over what we've had previously. The problem with this, though, the theme then uses a database to train a deep learning algorithm, so all AI and stuff, right? And they call this result algorithm the exception net, and the result is very impressive. Exception net clearly outperforms other types of techniques in spotting videos that have been manipulated, even when the videos have been compressed, which normally it's even a harder task for this AI to sort of, you know, just really justify. The problem with this, though, they discovered the same deep learning technique that they are using to spot these face swap videos can also be improved, can also be used to improve the quality.
You can make a better fake.
Of a face swap, yeah. So it could be a better fake. So it's really, you know, with great responsibility, with great power comes great responsibility. And yeah, this is the clear example, like, there is this technology that is available right now for us to detect face swaps and deep fakes, right? But it's only a matter of time that, you know, people who have, you know, malicious intent to use the same technique for, you know, making better fakes. And it's a real difficult problem, because we know about fake news and videos, though. Mm-hmm. Those are supposed to be the ones where, you know, yeah, if I see a video of it, then I'll believe
it's real.
It's real. Yeah. And this deep fakes, you know, at this point in time, they may be like 60 to 70% believable. If they are compressed, maybe slightly more. But it's only a matter of time before, you know, they become like 100% believable. And then what do? You just don't watch videos anymore?
Scary stuff, though. Mm. There was that whole thing about voices. We can change voices that Adobe were doing, where they can insert words that you never said into interviews.
I tell
that
you.
That combined with something like this. Mm.
We're just going to create fake human beings.
Well, there is one. He's leading the American public. Moving on. Time to take a very short break with some music. It is the Black Keys with Lonely Boy. Of course, we are asking you a question on 018-789-8899, which is a WhatsApp number. If you think you are addicted to your smartphone, or anybody you know who might be addictive, get them to listen to us, and let's find out how addicted they actually are according to Arvin's five traits. Yeah?
Yep, big five.
Big five. Mm. Okay, music. It is the Black Keys with Lonely Boy here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with
Arvin Yivaraj
and
Jeff Sandhu,
who's very sad because we don't have any messages yet talking about addiction and smartphone addiction.
It looks like nobody's addicted to their smartphones, because no one's tweeting in, no one's WhatsApping.
Maybe they're listening to find out who's going to confess first, because that happens a lot. We've already said we're addicts.
Hey,
right?
If you want to keep it anonymous, just say I want to be kept anonymous.
Yeah, and we'll call everybody Dave. So Dave has said. Anyway.
I was thinking of
Dave 1.
Yeah, Dave 1, Dave 2.
Yeah, that will work, right? Anyway, if you want to get in touch, Dave, our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899, or of course on Twitter at BFM Radio. I've got a story for you now. Can I talk? Am I allowed?
Mm-hmm.
It's about MIT's wearable device. So if you've read any kind of science fiction, it's likely you've heard about this thing called subvocalization.
I love MIT.
Mm. Right? You love MIT. Right. It's the practice of silently saying words in your head. Like when you read and you kind of imagine the words in your head.
Yeah.
Right? That's sub-vocalization. But it's only recently begun to be used as a way to interact with other computers and mobile devices. And so to that end, MIT researchers have created a device you wear on your face, of course, that can measure neuromuscular signs that get triggered when you sub-vocalize. So it looks like a weird medical device that strapped to your face. It's easier to see it getting a little bit smaller. But here's what it does. So you you think about these words in your head, and you have micro movements of your jaw and your mouth. And what this device does is it reads those micro movements that your brain is producing and then sends that information to a receiver. So let's say, for example, you have an app on your phone and you are thinking and you're looking at the screen and you're thinking down, the device will move the thing down. And you'll say, in your head, you'll say, I want to move right, and it will move your cursor right. Select little things like that. So you can sit there silently telling your computer what to do. You can move your mouse, you can move your cursors, all of that kind of stuff. Really interesting idea.
As you were talking, you have those conversations in your head. You go like, "Ooh, that's interesting." And you're like, oh,
right.
Wow. It's like, wow.
So not only that, but you can do little things like, can you tell me what time it is? And because of the way that the device is created, it will go and fetch the time from your phone and then deliver the time into your head, like the bone conducting headphones. Right. So it'll come forward and go, it is 12:43. Very smart idea. And I like the idea about it because if you can, let's imagine just for a few moments that something like this would have been available for Stephen Hawking, right? So he could have worn one of these and all of his typing and whatever would have been done just by him thinking about the words.
Instead of twitching his cheek or whatever.
But I mean, what would you use it for? If you had the ability to kind of control your devices just by thinking about it, what would you do?
For me, I'm just thinking about how much does the device know. Like, do you have to like consciously think about something?
Yes.
Like go up and down or
yes.
Okay. Because then it's like super noisy up there. Because right. You can get like because you have like so many thoughts going on at the same time. Like, how does the device pick up like what it wants you to do?
You're right. By focusing on one specific word, that's how it picks things up.
And most of the thoughts that we have in our head are very evil.
We don't want other people knowing about these.
And then
thoughts.
Suddenly it's just like. It was in my head.
It's funny you say that because there's been other reports about this where if the data that you are thinking could be collected, for example, and logged, let's say you were thinking those particular evil thoughts about whatever it is, whether it's about your...
Don't like you, Richard. I mean, sorry.
Right, yeah. So maybe those thoughts would have been picked up and logged somewhere and then our boss could have come and looked along at the logs in your phone and thought, well, Jeff said he doesn't like Richard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So yeah, it is a dangerous place to go and venture into our minds, right? Because it is a very dark place there.
Yeah.
And most of the times, we tend to filter them out before we say things, and we gotta, you know, we put all this moral compass in and, you know, the caring, the warm, the feelings and all that before we actually say it, right? But what happens in the mind itself sometimes it's like what Arin said, it's a whole mess in there.
Right.
You start thinking a billion things at one time. So if that device could you have to actually focus on this. I think it makes a lot of sense. What I'm curious to know is this a very fashionable device, Rich?
No, it's not by any stretch of the imagination. No, it looks like you've been in some kind of accident and they've bandaged half of your face up. Right now, anyway. But, I mean, one of the ideas I thought about is, imagine if we're sat around a coffee table, for example, having a cup of coffee, and we're having a conversation, and one of us asks a question that none of us know the answer to. And the first thing that you would normally do is you would pick up your phone and, you know, you would Google search it. And whilst you're doing that, your attention is diverted elsewhere, and you're not part of the conversation.
Yeah.
Imagine, though, if you could still converse with me and Arvin, Jeff, and in your head you're thinking, okay, you've asked that question, your phone's already found the answer because you've just thought it. You don't detach from that conversation. You're still part of the conversation.
But don't you have to focus? Like, if you're, if like, let's say, like,
Arvin, I'm not from MIT, my friend. I don't know.
No. What if I'm talking to you,
right?
But then I'm thinking about something else that I want my phone to pick up. Then I
you do that all the time anyway. You talk to me whilst thinking about something else.
Thinking about something else. It's just I have like a glazed look on my face, like I'm dazed off something.
Like Jeff is right now. You know, he's focusing on something else, but you know,
I'm actually listening. Yeah, okay. Subconsciously.
Yeah. So you're at sub-vocalization.
We do have some tweets on the smartphones addiction. Go on. Yeah, so Ong, he says that I think many of us are addicted to our smartphones, himself included. All we need to see is how often we pick up our phones as soon as we enter things like places like the lifts.
Right.
You know? I guess, you know, it's true. Like, when we get into any situation that is a little bit quiet or a little bit awkward, or just you have that 10 seconds, you tend to just whip your phone out and you go like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Even just to see the time these days. I love my watch, and like I'm a big watch fan, connoisseur in that sense, but I still take out my phone to check. Yeah. What time is it? Oh, yeah, because, you know, it's big, bright words, right? So, and then there's also Chia. He's actually sent in a lot of messages before. Chia says, hey, Rich, Tenny here. He's saying that he's not addicted to his smartphone or social media. He says that, it, in fact, like, he actually hates smartphone because it's the thing of the old age, I guess. Mm. And he says that it still confuses him unless it's just WhatsApping BFM only. So, yeah, he's a big fan.
Oh, well, thank you, Tenny. Thank you very much.
It's so funny that Ong said the thing about the lift, because I've done it like so many times. Even when I take the lift here, I go in and I pull out my phone. I don't want to check anything. I know there are no notifications. It's just empty. I'm just scrolling on my home screen until I go down the first floor. Then I just like walk out.
It's a dead spot in the lift. You can't see anything anyway. Yeah. You know?
And Dave sent in a text saying that, oh my, he's addicted and he's doing something that you're not allowed to do when you're not supposed to use your phone when you're doing this. So Dave, please put down the phone. Clearly you are addicted.
Dave, you need one of these devices from MIT that can listen to your sub-vocalization.
There's one more from 6008. He says here, not gonna lie, most of children born in the 1990s onwards are actually phone addicts, himself included. On an additional note, we should have fake humans in this country too as well. So I guess everyone could be a fake person if they would want to.
If they want to be.
Yeah, if they want to be.
Okay, keep those messages coming in. Keep them rolling. Keep Jeff happy. 018-789-8899. That is the WhatsApp number. Or get us on Twitter, of course, at BFM Radio. When we come back, a happy story about killer robots. Don't go anywhere. It's Hoodoo Gurus coming up here with Come Anytime on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Arvind Yuvaraj.
And on the WhatsApp phone, it is Mr.
Jasandu.
Go on then, Jeff.
So, Raimi, he sent in a WhatsApp saying that he is addicted. And he says...
No, you mean Dave, right?
Yeah, Dave 3.
Dave 3
says he wish he is connected to his phone. Like, I think he meant like, you know, the
physically
or like a chip inside his body. Biohacks, I guess, is probably talking about it. And we've just got one more. I think these days you can't live without your smartphone. This person runs a business from updating Facebook pages, paying suppliers, arranging meeting, attending complaints, messaging a radio station. All of that using a smartphone.
So, that's the problem, right? It's become so integrated into our everyday normal life.
Is that whole stigma, you're addicted to your smartphone, it shouldn't be, because it's allowing us to do things beyond just, you know, updating your social media pages or uploading selfies, right? Because that stigma is like, oh, you're addicted to your smartphone, you need help. I don't think so. It depends on what you're using your phone. You know, if you're using it to take selfies and post, then you have a certain type of problem. If you're using it for, you know, businesses, then you just have that kind of...
I tell you what is a good indicator, right? We use our phone an awful lot, but when you go on holiday somewhere and you switch your phone off and you don't have any contact and you feel great for that week or weekend or whatever it is, that's a sign of you not being addicted. It's a sign of you getting away from it.
Yeah. But you know what is the big problem with being disconnected for like a week or so?
That your office keeps sending you emails all the way through the evening.
As soon as you're connected. So I remember when I did a 14-hour flight, and you know, for that 14 hours, oh, you can't be connected, you're not on Wi-Fi, you're on airplane mode, right? As soon as you touch down and you get connected to a Wi-Fi spot, you just need to, you know, show the email ID of the hotel booking and stuff like that, immediately the phone keeps buzzing for a good like 5 minutes and you can't even use your phone. It's just bang, 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 bang. Yeah, you know, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
and it's also is like nowadays, even if you go on a trip, like let's say the 1 week, and then you don't connect and then you're away for weeks, people assume that something has happened to you because you're like, you're disappeared.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's a good thing, but it's also, it's so uncommon that, you know, if you don't buzz people or send them like a message or something, people think that you've obviously, like, you know, you've disappeared, or, you know, that something has happened to you and they should check up and, you know, like, what's happening? Why is he not logging in, why is he not dropping messages and stuff. So that's, you know, that's how connected we've become to our devices.
I know people who have had discussions of, and you know, individuals who are maybe very update their social media very regularly, like Facebook and Instagram, and then maybe for like they go on a 1 week or a 2 week hiatus and just quiet period, and then if they meet up, they go like, what's wrong? Like, is everything okay with you?
Yeah.
And you're like, what do you mean? And it's like, you haven't been posting anything. It's like, okay, yeah. So they read too much into it.
Right. Right. Keep your messages coming. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio. Killer Robots.
Yeah, it's 5 years this month since the launch of the campaign to stop killer robots. It's a global coalition of non-governmental groups calling for a ban on fully autonomous weapons. This month also marks the fifth time that countries have convened at the United Nations in Geneva to address the problems these weapons would pose if they are developed and put into use. Now, the countries meeting in Geneva, they're part of this thing called the Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons. While diplomatic progress has been made under this treaty since 2013, the pace needs to really pick up dramatically. Countries recognize that the dangers of fully autonomous weapons cannot wait another 5 years if they are to prevent weapons from becoming a full reality. So fully autonomous weapons, which would select and engage targets without meaningful human control, do not exist yet. But scientists have warned they soon could. And high-tech military powers, including China, Israel, Russia, South Korea, US, UK, they've all invested heavily in developments of these fully autonomous weapons. So far, there's no specific international law to halt this trend. Experts have sounded alarms that saying that, you know, allowing these machines cannot appreciate the value of human life to make life and death decision crosses this moral red line. These so-called killer robots, they lack human judgment, meaning that it would be very challenging to ensure that their decisions compiled with international humanitarian and human rights law. For example, a robot could not be pre-programmed to assess the proportionality of using force in every situation, and you would find it difficult to judge accurately whether civilian harm outweighs military advantage in each particular instance. So fully autonomous weapons raises the question, who would be responsible for attacks that violate these laws if a human did not make the decision on to fire a specific target? In fact, it would be legally difficult and potentially unfair to hold anyone responsible for this unforeseeable harm to civilians here. And there's also security concerns, because without any legal restraints on fully autonomous weapons, militaries could engage in this arms race and vying to develop this deadly technology that may, you know, lower the need to deploy soldiers while possibly lowering the threshold to armed conflict. So this campaign to stop killer robots, they argue that this new international laws are needed to preempt the development and production of fully autonomous weapons. There's a UN meeting that's going on right now. It's a one of 2 week long sessions. Countries have already offered several possible ways to proceed. The African group and Austria have joined 22 other countries voicing explicit support for a type of ban. Other countries have aligned themselves with the French and German proposal for political declaration, a set of non-binding guidelines that would be an interim solution at best. But there are still others who have explicitly expressed that, you know, we just need to rely on current existing international law, which doesn't stop us from, you know, these killer robots. And it's scary, because just after this whole thing came up, there was an article that came out that the US Army has just recently announced that they are developing the first drones that can spot and target vehicles and people using AI. This is the big step forward that we're afraid of, because current military drones, they're still controlled by people. Yeah. This new technology will decide who to kill with almost no human involvement. Once it's completed, these drones will represent the ultimate militarization of AI and trigger a vast legal and ethical implications for this wider society. There is a chance that warfare will move from fighting to extermination, losing any semblance of humanity in the process. And at the same time, it could also widen the sphere of warfare so that companies, engineers and scientists, they're all building AI to become a valid military target. So existing lethal military drones like this, the current most famous one is the MQ-9 Reaper. They are carefully controlled and piloted via a satellite. If a pilot drops a bomb or fires a missile, a human sensor operator actively guides it onto the chosen target using using a laser. Ultimately, the crew has this final ethical, legal, and operational responsibility for killing these designated human targets. One Reaper operator states that, you know, I'm very much in the mindset that I would allow an insurgent, however important a target, to get away rather than taking a risky shot that might kill a civilian. So even with these drones killing human, you know, killing human emotions, judgments, ethics, they've always remained at the center of war. The existence of mental trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD among drone operators, they show this.
Some of the highest rates.
Exactly, yeah. So there is a psychological impact of remote killing as well. Mm. And this is actually one of the points of, you know, the possible military and ethical arguments of supporters of autonomous killing drones. Because perhaps if these drones drop the bombs, psychologically, you know, we won't have, you know, PTSD anymore. We will just avoid the complete, you know, stress disorder that we get. But the weakness in this argument is that there's no one responsible then for killing this, and this completely, who do you blame for, right? There's a whole bunch of there's a book that's going to be coming out by this guy named Peter Lee. He interviewed 100 of Reaper crews, and every one of them spoke about that. You know, he said that they should have some human intervention here. These pilots are saying that really there is a need for a human intervention. Intervention. Now the thing is, the current international humanitarian law uses this dual-use facilities, those of which develop products for both civilian and military application, can be attacked in right circumstances. For example, in the 1999 Kosovo War, the Pančevo oil refinery was attacked because it could fuel Yugoslav tanks as well as fuel civilian cars. But military side outweighs the civilian side, hence it was attacked. With an autonomous drone weapon system, certain lines of computer code would almost certainly be classed as dual use. So companies like Google, its employees, or its systems could become liable to an attack from an enemy state. For example, if Google's Project Maven image recognition AI software is incorporated into let's say, for example, an American military autonomous drone, Google could actually find itself implicated in drone killing business, as might every other civilian contributor to, you know, such, you know, lethal autonomous systems. So if machines are left to decide who dies, especially on a grand scale, then what are we witnessing here is extermination.
We were just talking about it. It was either yesterday or the day before with Christine about how there are companies now that are developing AI that can hallucinate and suffer from depression.
Yeah.
You know, so something like this, if you have that kind of software imprinted in drones like this, for example, where drones have that ability to determine, to make these kind of decisions, life or death situations, where does that leave us? And I remember reading about these drone pilots with PTSD, you know, because the reason they have such a high prevalence of PTSD is because they are operating these drones out of Las Vegas. And what they're doing is that they're going from operating a drone in Las Vegas to walking in a mall within the next 5 minutes. Mm. They don't have that time to decompress. Whereas if you look at stuff like World War II, the soldiers there would have perhaps months to go from the war theater back to where they were. So they'd have all that time to decompress and get over to a degree the PTSD, but these guys don't even have a chance.
No, yeah. You know? Raz just sent in a WhatsApp, and he said that killer robots are here. Vice News has a good documentary on this, and yeah, go and check out the documentary on Vice if on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, if like killer robots, if I'm just from a different kind of perspective, if we are using AI in the killer robots and then like machine learning, and then they are making the decisions for themselves, isn't it better than people making the decisions? Because the robots, if let's say they cannot have PTSD, they cannot have depression, they are not emotional, normally people who are behind the controls, they are going to use like stereotypes. Let's say they go to like certain country, like country X, and then they're going to use like this stereotype and go like, oh, he's in the military, he's going to do this, he's going to detonate a bomb and stuff, and they're going to base it off their own biases, right? But if you have like a robot and then it has like machine learning, it has studied, it's not afraid of dying, so even if it's being approached by someone, it can make sure that that person is either innocent or guilty and then pull the trigger or not. So I don't know. Isn't
but
AI
who's
like
responsible for it? That is
if it makes a mistake, for example.
If a mistake would happen, we've seen autonomous vehicles like the one in Uber and Tesla as well, right? It will have mistakes, and the thing is that no one is held responsible for autonomous, you know, for these killer robots. That is the issue. Until we have some law that would put, you know, anyone responsible for that action, then I guess, you know, you could go ahead and try to, you know, implement. And using that data couldn't be very risky as well, because, you know, granted, a human would actually at least have some sort of biasness or maybe some sort of a degree of perception. Mm-hmm. But for these robots, they're using data sets that have been fed in by a type of individuals, a type of group. So you're not sure what exactly is this data is it feeding off. Is it data that's been fed off that, you know, has a certain type of racial biasness, political biasness, you know, just preferences, right? I don't like this person, and, you know, I'm going to feed data of all the people that I don't like individually, and then that's what happens, right? So, yeah.
All right, we have to move on, take a very short break. Some music coming up from Damon Albarn with Everyday Robots, of course, here on BFM 89.9. Keep the messages coming in very quickly, 018-789-8899 here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Business for Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Jasandu.
Thank you for all of the messages this afternoon to the WhatsApp number 018-789-8899. You've got about 3 minutes if you want to get in touch.
Just a clarification, the Killer Robots documentary is by Motherboard, not Vice.
Motherboard. Mm-hmm. Okay. Final story. It's not about a robot, but it's about something metal. It's a microwave, or a reverse microwave, if you like. So if a microwave can also chill a room temperature tasty beverage down to 37 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 3 degrees, in 6 minutes, is it still a microwave?
I didn't know.
No. Right. What is it then? Yeah. Well, this one is. It's called the Frigidaire. It's a new countertop appliance that looks just like a microwave. It heats food just like a microwave. Uh-huh. But if you push a button on its control panel, the Frigidaire can cool drinks and flash freeze fresh food in seconds.
Wow.
Designed by engineers in Spain and built in Korea, this thing is brilliant. It can freeze fresh fruits and vegetables in just 6 minutes. Imagine that. You've gotten home from work on Friday. You've had a very particularly hard week.
Yeah, it's a Friday.
Imagine
if it's a Friday.
Right.
You know, I had a long week.
You've had a long week. You've picked up your tasty beverage from the supermarket. Mm. You've put it in your car. By the time you've got home, what's happened?
It's
gotten warm, right?
Yeah.
So then you think, I'll put it back in the fridge. And then it takes another 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
I'll forget about it.
And you forget about it.
I'll probably fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got a microwave on there, the fridge on there. You pop it in, button on. The beautiful thing about this is, what do they tell you not to do with microwaves? What can't you do with microwaves?
Well, you can't put metal objects
Correct.
In, right?
This one you can.
Ah.
Right? So there you go. Just a little bit of news for you. That's all it was. It was just like a little product review. Apparently, it's got really good... Matt Armitage should be talking about this, actually. King of the crowd. so it's a really good idea. It's called the Frigidaire. Yes, it does microwaving, heating, and, of course, microwavable.
Did they give how much is this going to cost? How many gazillion dollars is
it doesn't, as of yet. Oh, wait. It should cost around $1,000.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not on sale yet, but it will be soon.
I'll wait for 5 years.
Yeah. I'm sure someone's going to fix this in their like freezers. Like they're going to replace the freezer with this. So you get like fridges, like huge fridges. So it's like freezer, fridge, and Frigidaire.
Super freeze.
Frigidaire.
All right, we have to quickly wrap up, but we'll run through the stories that we covered today just in case you missed any part of the show. Don't forget, you can get the podcast available. You can download the podcast via our app, which is available in the Apple App Store or, of course, on Google Play. So we started off with the Big Five.
Yeah, the Big Five, the personality traits that put you at risk of smartphone addiction, according to science.
And there's a new algorithm that could automatically spot face swaps in videos, but could also be used for better fake videos.
And MIT's wearable device, which is ugly, but it can hear the words you say in your head before you say them.
And we are running out of time to stop killer robot weapons.
We are. And then finally, you'll soon be able to buy a microwave that will freeze your tasty beverage in just minutes. Brilliant stuff. All progress. We will be back tomorrow, of course. It is a Friday at the same time, same place at noon for Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury on behalf of Arvind Yuvaraj and Jeff Sandu. This has been Enterprise BizBytes here on BFM 89.9. Music to take us out. It is MGMT with Electric Feel here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.